Hello there, I'm Aaron Martell.
And I'm Lou Figaro.
And welcome to Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, a podcast where we talk about and review a rock album of our choice. Joining us this episode, we have a returning guest co-pilot and Patreon legend from the Fat Bearded Vinyl Guy YouTube channel. Matt Carwick is back.
What's up?
Matt, welcome back once again to the R4 podcast.
Rock and roll, motherfucker.
Yes.
It's funny you say that I'm from the Fat Bearded Vinyl Guy YouTube channel, like there's literally anybody else involved.
You are the Fat Bearded Vinyl Guy. You have the man himself. So Matt picked the album for us this episode, therefore we're going to review Firehouse's 1990 self-titled debut album. So Matt, where do you come in with Firehouse in the debut record?
Well, in the fall of 1990, that was my freshman year of high school, and I was on the freshman football team, and there were three albums on rotation in the locker room constantly. There was Razor's Edge, AC/DC, Warrant's Cherry Pie, and this one, Firehouse. I picked this up on cassette at like a Sam Goody or whatever was at the mall and just wore that thing out. This album was the soundtrack to probably the first half of my freshman year of high school. I started getting into different bands. I mean, tapes were flying around that school. Metallica, Crew, Guns N' Roses, Van Halen. By the end of my freshman year, this cassette was buried under a lot of other stuff. You fast forward to early 92, me and a few of my loser buddies were going to see Tesla. They were on the tour for Psychotic Supper album. And Firehouse was opening. And this show was my first rock concert that I went to. So Firehouse was the first band I saw live. This was almost 2 years removed from this album, but they were getting ready to release Hold Your Fire. And they played a song from that album, and I have no idea what they played. I didn't even get Hold Your Fire. I don't know that album at all. Well, then fast forward again to about 9 or 10 years ago, and I was getting ready to go for a walk. And I wanted to listen to some Tesla again, but I wasn't paying for streaming music at the time, so you had to put up with this ever-popular similar artists. After something like Edison's Medicine was on, Firehouse came on. It was overnight sensation. And it's insane how one song can bring back a flood of memories, good and bad, but also how much 14-year-old me loved this album. And finally, when I started getting back into vinyl and became the Fat Bearded Vinyl Guy, this album was at the top of my list to look for. Sadly, it was never officially pressed in the U.S., so back in the day before shipping from other countries didn't cost you the blood of your firstborn, I got my hands on a South Korean pressing of this album. So that's my story.
So you found it. Wow.
I did, yeah.
Cool. Lou, how about you?
Firehouse was one of those bands that were at the tail end of the whole glam metal thing that got ruined through dilution. It was at a time when Motley Crue and their ilk were on the decline through saturation. There was no distinguishing between bands anymore. There was just too much that sounded the same. Rat, Motley, Dokken, then later bands like Vinnie Vincent and Slaughter, Warrant, Great White, Pretty Boy Floyd, White Lion, they all had the same kind of guitar, you know, gunslinger guitar, that castrated pretty boy singer that hits all the high notes, has none of the balls like Rob Halford, Bruce Dickinson, Jeff Tate. It was pussified power metal to me, and I was over it. The cover looks like someone's nephew, like photoshopped some stock images off the internet. The background's a photo of a farmhouse in the distance that's got the worst unrealistic added flames in it, like they were learning how to use these newfangled computer things for art. In the foreground is a picture pasted of an enticingly sweaty, bikini-topped model in a completely different lighting than the outdoor background that's there. She's cut out in front of a magazine. It looks like she was cut out, like from a magazine and glued in, you know. She's holding a match, you know, to set the aforementioned house on fire. Ooh, I see what they did there. Firehouse. Hot girl sets the house on fire. Get the firehouse. Woo-hoo, yeah. Oh, this is going to hurt, isn't it? I've never heard this before, and I couldn't tell you one song off of it before dialing it up on Apple Music before the show, which actually is really fucking up my algorithm now, because now it's starting to recommend shit like this.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
I vaguely remembered this band when this record was big. It was the early 90s, right? Because of their ballad Love of a Lifetime, which I did not care for at the time. So based on that, I never went any further with Firehouse or this album. I had nothing to do with them until you picked it for this episode, Matt. So this was my first taste of Firehouse for real, preparing for this podcast. Now I'll give you some basic facts about this record, brought to you by Wikipedia. Firehouse is the self-titled debut album from American rock band Firehouse, released on September 11th, 1990 on Epic Records. It was produced by David Prater and was recorded in 1990 at Bear Track Studio, Suffern, New York. It reached number 21 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart and is certified 2x platinum by the RIAA. And here's the band's lineup card. We've got C.J. Snare on lead vocals and keyboards, Bill Leverty on guitars and backing vocals, Perry Richardson on bass guitar and backing vocals, and Michael Foster on drums, percussion, and backing vocals. Okay, let's move on into a track-by-track analysis of this album. The lead-off track is Rock on the Radio, written by Cosby Ellis, Michael Foster, Bill Leverty, and CJ Snare. Matt, what do you got for us?
The intro to the song and then the album was their live intro, but this song was not their live opener, which
That's surprising.
Was disturbing. It didn't sound right, but it builds up decently. The yeah, that sets the tone of a paint-by-numbers hair metal record. That said, I love the drums on this album, especially the kick drums, the 16ths, the diggity-diggity-diggity-diggity-dum, Nico from Iron Maiden does that a lot, and I love that shit. Bill Leverty's solo is serviceable, but he does so many damn harmonics, you think he was a student of Zakk Wylde. It's a decent opener for me, even if the lyrics are a little bland.
Lou?
Yeah, the drum circle intro thing is cool. Some gang vocals, they rock, turn it up. I pick things up and I put them down. Pick things up and put them down. Loud, good. It starts out pretty caveman-y. And then the first thing I think of is from Star Trek with the yeah. Remember that? From Mirror, when all the kids like bonk bonk on the head. Then it turns into Cherry Pie, which I think is like, they were both released at the same time, but it's the same riff,
same year,
is a ripoff of I Love Rock and Roll or Pour Some Sugar on Me. It's that same riff. I guess the formula they figured out sells in 1990. I'm already turned off. I haven't heard the guitar solo yet. This is why music died. It's formulaic and dumb. Next.
So this starts with Michael Foster's faux tribal drum intro and heavily reverbed and phased vocals imploring us to rock, come on, and turn it up, along with some vibra slap rattles that lets us know there's going to be some serious rocking going on. Then we get some big yeah, 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 yes. Lou, you played that really nice. It sounded great. And then finally, a slow, lumbering thud rocker cut straight out of hair metal cloth with Bill Leverty's snarling, trebly guitars, Perry Richardson's distorted bass, eighth notes, and a very slick pop metal production, courtesy of producer David Prater. Lead singer CJ Snare is one of those high, whiny voices that make me chuckle when he tries to get tough and he growls. He's much more effective when he just sings the melody. He also has these certain vocal mannerisms, like making James Hetfield light enunciations at the end of phrases and drawing out syllables so that you can like kind of slide and twist the notes, which quickly goes from amusing to annoying. Leverty solo, though, it's well put together. It combines melodic runs with a guitar-mini passage, and he does a pretty good job. I love this kind of shit in the 80s. The lyrics exult in the power of rock. It's like thunder. It's like dynamite. Turn it up till your speakers blow. This is meant to be an anthemic hair metal opener that pumps you up and gets you ready for Firehouse. And even though it comes in really close to hair metal's expiration date, I don't hate this. I guess I've heard worse. Is that a compliment?
For this, probably.
The next track is All She Wrote, written by Bill Leverty and CJ Snare. Lou, start us off.
I don't know what's worse. The Backstreet Boys, bye-bye, baby, bye-bye, kind of beginning. You know, I'm waiting for Triangle Dancing. Or the blatant ripoff of Round and Round by Rat. That's the gorilla in the room, really. And it's a shitty one at that. I mean, oh my God, what am I in for? That's All She Wrote. You're telling me.
Matt.
Oh, good. A cliche for a title. That doesn't start off well. First thing I have in my notes here is that the bass line is completely unimpressive. Nice Rick Savage special. We have more Bill Leverty harmonics, but he has one I love at 1 minute 45 where he hits the whammy bar on that, and I just can't help but air guitar that shit, that doo-doo-doo-wee-wee-wee, even hitting the whammy bar. I heard a live version where that fill is about three times as long. CJ Snare is literally finishing up that vocal line. I think he didn't even finish it before Bill starts the fill. There's a guitar mini part in the solo that I really like. And now I'm going to address kind of an elephant that I think that's here. Many, if not all, of the song titles on this album sound like they came up with the title first and then shoehorned some lyrics that kind of fit around it. I mean, it's one way to do it. Like if I tell my 5-year-old to take her shoes off and she kicks them across the room, I mean, hey, it's a way to do something. It's not really how I do it, but hey, you do you. And that's all I wrote.
I think your daughter could have wrote a better song than that.
Well, just like Lou said, I immediately picked up on this, in which Firehouse blatantly rewrites Rat's Round and Round, and it's not even in the same ballpark as that Rat pop metal classic. On the plus side, Leverty's solo's well done again, with plenty of screaming notes and guitar-mini phrasing. It seems like this guy can hang with your favorite glam metal shredder, but it doesn't like make me forget Warren DeMartini or anything. Lyrically, the girl left our hero with only a goodbye letter and no reason for ditching him. She just don't want him no more. But I'll just let the song's chorus tell you how I feel about this one. Bye-bye, baby. Bye-bye. This was the fourth and final single from the album that reached number 58 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart. The following track is Shake and Tumble, written by Michael Foster, Bill Leverty, Perry Richardson, and CJ Snare.
Shake and tumble.
Matt, how about this one?
Well, 14-year-old me completely understood what this song was about. You know, half of the hair metal songs were about sex in varying degrees of subtlety. I don't say things like this a lot because it's not really in my wheelhouse, but I like the production on this record. I mean, I dig the guitar tone, even if it doesn't vary a lot. It does start to get a little old about halfway through. I mean, the nice drum fills again, and I'm kind of sounding like a broken record there. Can I address that, the broken record? Because that doesn't really make much sense, saying a broken record. How about a skipping record? A dirty record that Lou can put some wood glue on it. I don't know. A broken record will fuck your needle up. Anyway, despite the lyrics being absolutely terrible, I like this song. 3 for 3 so far. Kind of.
Lou.
Oh, boy, cowbell. Here's the Motley Crue song on the record. Actually, it sounds like that band Steel Dragon from Rockstar, doesn't it? Remember Mark Wahlberg? I'm living proof that if you work hard enough, you can want it bad enough, dreams do come true. Stand up and shout! Shake a tempo! Please. I'd rather actually be listening to that. They do sound like they're produced to the nines. What was this guy's name? He definitely, they brought in the hotshot producer to make sure that this band made money.
Yeah. And here comes another mid-tempo thumper that's based around a nice grinder of a riff and a choppy rhythm in the verses that I actually like. Foster adds plenty of cowbell, and there's some crunch to the guitars, but the production is so bright that there's no heft to the music. This should pound your ears into the ground, but instead it pierces them. Again, Leverty impresses me with a solo. I'm going to sing his praises most of this episode about his solos. He really leans into the guitarmony, but his solo construction is well thought out and well executed. Now, to me, CJ Snare's voice sounds like a cross between Motley Crue's Vince Neil and Steve Plunkett from Autograph. It's not terrible for the genre, especially when he lays off all that extra shit I was talking about. But as a lyricist, holy fuck, there isn't a pop metal trope this guy shies away from. He thinks it's 1986 instead of 1990. He's a bad boy looking for some action. He's too naughty to be nice, too bad to be good. He wants a down and dirty girl. This dude cops lyrics straight from the Bret Michaels playbook. That said, it's got the big gang vocal chorus to suit your hair metal needs, and it's fine. And this actually was the first single from the record that did not chart. The next track is Don't Treat Me Bad, written by Cosby Ellis, Michael Foster, Bill Leverty, and CJ Snare. Like this one, Lou?
I'm sure this is exactly what Steel Panther was parodying. I can't even say that word. Paradising. This is what Steel Panther was paradising. Note for note, I could see these guys doing this. But where that band is intentionally hysterically funny, these guys are unintentionally eye-rolling and cringy. It's even Motley didn't, with their don't go away mad, just go away. It was better than this dreck. Go pull up your spandex. So they went from me comparing them to a made-up movie band in exact detail to a future band parodying them for their ridiculousness of what glam metal became. And they're copying you guys note for note. I keep waiting for the punchline. Don't treat me bad, but I like it anyway. Don't treat me bad. Just go away.
Matt.
Initially, this was my favorite song on the record. It's yet another cliche, but it's not really the title. It's the chord progression. At least for me in the coda, that bass line accents it, that doom, 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 doom. doom 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 boom boom boom. It's one of those that sounds just really familiar. 14-year-old me was going, I've heard this before, and I have no idea where. Later, I heard it. The Cardigans had it on their one hit. I think it was called Love Fool. That love me had the same kind of thing. And you're welcome for letting me put that in your head for a bit.
As soon as I heard this, I said to myself, this has got to be a single. And yep, I was right. If you created a computer virus, program that was designed to provide what it thought was a hair metal hit, something like this is what it would come up with. Acoustic guitar intro, simmering verses into big catchy choruses, sensitive to soaring vocals with You Done Me Wrong lyrics, melodic solo. Oh, it's got it all. It's perfectly fine, perfectly serviceable, perfectly generic, and I could give a perfect shit about it. And this was the second single that reached number 19 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart. The following track is Oughta Be a Law, written by Cosby Ellis, Bill Leverty, and CJ Snare. Matt, hit us.
Okay, now I'm starting to get a little fatigued. We have another cliche of a lyric that's been used a million times between 1983 and 1992. This chick is so hot, it ought to be illegal. I want to give her a strip search because there's absolutely nothing rapey about that. It's sad, really, that 1990, in my lifetime, I have to say something like, it was a different time. You know, there are parts of aging I really don't want to accept. Gray hair, colonoscopies. That was one of them. Yes, it was different. It was a different time. Music and the music industry was different. But it's a part of aging that I don't want to accept. Can the breakdown be any more ridiculous? I want to take you downtown, strip you down, and throw you in the slammer. I'm going to throw the book at you, girl. Stick 'em out! 46-year-old me is cringing right now.
Lou.
I can only think Big Bottom with the pink torpedo. This is what starts out actually a little groovy. It's very Van Halen, very Alex Van Halen. But then it falls back into the formulaic bullshit that just plagues this record. Oh, and by the way, it's High and Dry in the chorus, or Bon Jovi's In and Out of Love. Don't you have an original thought between the four of you, Firehose? Do you?
That's an insult to Firehose. Okay, it starts off dopey with the up against the wall and spread 'em, baby intro. But I actually like the bluesy inflected riffs, and I did get another gang vocal chorus that this group is smart enough to stick right in your face. And Leverty continues to impress me with the soloing. This time he pulls out Van Halen-esque tapping and shredding. And if I'd heard this in the mid-80s, I probably would have been all about it. Lyrically, it is dumb rock territory. But aren't all of these? The chick's so hot, there ought to be a law against her. And CJ Snare is the love cop who's going to bring her in. Though he attempts a David Lee Roth kind of spoken word thing that just fails hilariously. And all the hair metal tropes aside, I kind of like this one too. It's okay. For me, it's just dumb fun. That's how I have to take it.
16-year-old me would have loved this, but yeah, 55-year-old me is really cringing hard.
Yeah, different story. The next track is Lover's Lane, written by Cosby Ellis, Michael Foster, Bill Leverty, and CJ Snare. Lou, Let's have it.
Another Alex Van Halen influenced beginning, that beat that it's going on, the groove behind it. It's very Van Halen. Sounds like a sped up Kevin Dubrow on the vocal department. Really cookie cutter hit machine stuff. The solo is an example of incredible talent on the guitarist part. What's his name? I'm serious. I'm asking you because I didn't look it up. it's just so overdone by this point in the game that I'm not even impressed anymore. But he does have chops.
Matt.
Way-oy! What the hell was that? Were they trying to do a Def Leppard Gunten Glieben Glauben Globen? So that's what they were trying to do? I'm getting tired of these song titles right now. You know, I've been married so long that I don't know anymore. Is there such a thing as a lover's lane or a makeout point or stuff like that? I mean, I have a teenage daughter, but she just finished eighth grade, so she's not quite there yet. Musically, I kind of like the song. Once again, Michael Foster's drum work is good. I like the kick drum 16ths. More good guitar screams from Bill Leverty. The lyrics suck, but it's hair metal. I mean, you're not getting Shakespeare. A wet pair of panties by any other name still smells so sweet.
Now we get the fast pop metal boogie shuffle. All these bands had to have at least one, and I guess it shows that Michael Foster's capable of more than just playing a straight beat. It also shows off bassist Perry Richardson a little bit. He plays some cool walking bass, so hey, the rhythm section steps it up some on this one. Leverty supplies the pop metal riffs, and his solo once again is fucking choice in his preferred style of combining Van Halen pyrotechnics with guitarmony phrases, and it's too bad this band appeared when it did, at least in his case. He's never going to be recognized as a top glam metal shredder, although he really can play with any of those guys. Snare's vocals are still semi-annoying, and lyrically, he's getting some roadhead, and he's all revved up, so he's going to park at the local Lover's Lane to get some backseat action. It's got another sing-along chorus, and yep, it's another derivative track I don't mind. The following track is Home Is Where the Heart Is, written by Bill Leverty and CJ Snare. Matt, how about this?
I guess Live, Laugh, Love wasn't good enough for a song title. It's hard to get into a song whose title can be found on a repurposed slab of wood at Hobby Lobby. I'm not a fan of that synth intro. Honestly, when I was listening on cassette, since it was the end of side one, I would hear that intro, hit stop, flip it, and rewind to the start of side two. When the song actually starts, it's tolerable. Let's face it, the lyrics are crap. Every band has a song about life on the road, not usually on their debut album, but whatever. It's another one of that's the way to do it moments, I guess. But I listened to it to get ready for today, and my favorite part is towards the end of the guitar solo. Leverty is wailing on the guitar, Foster is beating the shit out of that kick drum, and I am loving it. Get rid of that intro, get some different lyrics, and yeah, I'd probably like it more.
Lou.
Yeah, it almost had me fooled into thinking it was going to be a power ballad, and my power ballad sense is tingling on this album. It almost sounds like Styx. It's got hit written all over it. The syrupy verses to get your girlfriend wet, repetitive generic gang vocal chorus to get you singing along, and a bizarrely technical guitar solo that sounds like the musical equivalent of Mary Lou Retton on her floor exercise. The final off-key eunuch note the singer does before whining through the fade-out makes me want me to get my shotgun out.
Whoa, keyboard intro. The musical diversity this band displays is staggering. And then we get another acoustic guitar arpeggiated intro. And then another mid-tempo glam rocker that does what it's supposed to do once again. Nothing wrong with it. It's got the riffs, solos, and vocals, and a chorus designed to sing loudly along with. This time, the lyrics are nostalgic. Remember that place where we all used to hang out and party at when we were younger? Yeah, I miss those times. I gotta get back home so we can relive them. Do I hate this? No. Does it yank my crank? Also no. The next track is Don't Walk Away, written by Bill Leverty and CJ Snare. Let's have it.
Well, Matt, you said it before, Zach Wilde. That's a Zach Wilde-inspired pinch harmonic riff that starts off the slow burner. It's got the smoky vocals through the verses, begging you to please, I need you, baby. Give it another try. Walking away won't solve anything. Yeah, it will, dude. Let's not kid ourselves. You sound hard to live with. And you're always leaving hair in the sink. I mean, who can live with that?
Matt.
Oh, God, why do I like this album? This song desperately needs different lyrics. It's not like every other song on the record where the lyrics just plain suck. No, these lyrics need to be completely rebuilt and need a completely different feel. The music that has this dirty attitude, it needs to be about a stripper. We all love songs about strippers. And I love dirty, filthy blues that you can catch the clap from. This song is the equivalent of The Rock being cast as C-3PO in Star Wars. Oh, your woman left, didn't she? Well, just bang a groupie, even if she does look like a potato. I could live with it if he was singing to a stripper. Come on, baby, one more song. Don't walk away. Once again, I dig the music, but the lyrics are awful.
Oh, fuck me. It's the slow hair metal blues shuffle. Why not, really? It's getting tougher and tougher for me to come up with descriptions for this record other than competently but generically written and performed. So it doesn't offend me. And Leverty proves he can play a double-tracked bluesy solo as well as shred. I mean, these guys are doing what so many bands of its ilk were doing. And they're not terrible. I find it listenable. And do I need to tell you what the song is about? Just look at that song title. It'll tell you all you need to know. Yeah. Next to Cop Lou's phrase.
Next.
The following track is Seasons of Change, written by Bill Leverty and CJ Snare. Let's have it.
This is just an intro to Overnight Sensation. This was a total trend in the hair metal era with an acoustic intro to a heavier rocker. It's just Bill Leverty masturbating on an acoustic guitar for 90 seconds. And naturally, harmonics.
Lou.
Yeah, there's a lot of guitar hero homages going on there too. It's got Spanish Fly in there. A little Tony Iommi, Laguna Sunrise, a little Orchid in there as well. There's a little Fight Fire with Fire, Metallica nod in the beginning there too. Little intro to Ride the Lightning. I'm hearing anyway. And since the singer doesn't open his mouth, it's my favorite on the album.
Yeah, a minute and a half classically influenced acoustic guitar solo, and it's fucking aces. I kind of agree with you a little bit there, Lou. It's very well done. It starts off like Van Halen's Spanish Fly and goes right down the line of all your favorite acoustic guitar heavy metal players right into Randy Rhoads territory at the end. Leverty does borrow from the right influences for this genre, I guess. It basically serves as an intro to the next track. And that next track is Overnight Sensation, written by Cosby Ellis, Michael Foster, Bill Leverty, and CJ Snare. Can't you feel it? Just let go. Can't you see that? Lou, what do you say?
I respect the 12-second scream in the beginning, but this one's kind of toothless, don't you think? It's got no balls. And I like to kick him in his, like, mid-scream if he had some. The guitar guy's good enough. We're all saying it. He's got enough subtle nuances to keep me amused. The guitar calisthenics are wearing kind of thin. I get it. That's what was in at the time. But guys like this are dime a dozen by now. And this is ultimately what ruined it for me. I do respect that they didn't fade this out.
Matt?
This song for me is the highlight of the record. This was the live opener, and why it's buried so deep on side two is beyond me. I haven't mentioned much about CJ Snare's vocals. I mean, the rest of you have, but because like many hair metal bands, they're not that great. I mean, there are worse hair metal vocalists out there. You know, that dude from Faster Pussycat for one. At any rate, CJ's wail, that top, that yeah, for my money, that is one of my favorite vocal single notes on a yeah. Once again, the lyrics are hacky and stupid. You can be a star, but the music more than makes up for it. Another good guitar mini part at the end of the solo, and it's a decent end of the record for me.
And whoo, Snare holds that intro note. You had 12 seconds. I had 11 seconds. I timed it. But, you know, 12 seconds. I mean, who does he think he is? Axl Rose? He ain't no fucking Roger Daltrey or Bruce Dickinson. This is a chugging rocker that feels heavier than most of the tracks we've heard so far, and it's clearly meant for the headbangers to get it out. Firehouse fucking rocks, man! Leverty initially shreds the shit out of this solo, and then he cools it down with more guitar-mini goodness. I mean, hey, he's been the man for me most of this album, and he brings it again. The lyrics are meant to be empowering, pump you up. You can do anything. You can make your dreams come true. You just have to take a chance and go for it, and you can be a star, like Firehouse. I'm glad this track is here at this point of the album because I was nodding off, and this woke me up back to semi-consciousness. This is one of the better ones for me.
I will give it best solo on the album, especially that little thing that he does in the beginning, that little... very, very, very. It's like that real widespread kind of real fast picking. Good shit. It was good shit.
The penultimate track is Love of a Lifetime, written by Bill Leverty and CJ Snare. How about this one?
There are different types of ear burn for me. There's a song that I'm annoyed by, but it's still somewhat tolerable. A lot of Van Halen falls into that category for me because there was a radio station in my area that I used to listen to. They would play a Van Halen song once an hour, religiously. And it took me years to appreciate Van Halen again. Another type of ear burn is a song I never want to hear for the rest of my life. This is the latter. Now, some context. I DJed weddings for a time in the late 90s. I played this song way too much. This one, Come On Eileen, that fucking Celine Dion song from Titanic, and the Macarena. That is the playlist waiting for me in hell on constant repeat. This song was a massive hit. And naturally, if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing. This led to the creatively titled When I Look Into Your Eyes on Hold Your Fire, as well as the equally creative I Live My Life for You on Equally Creative 3. You'd think that song and album titles would get better by their third album. You'd think. But when you're trying to write a panty dropper, keep it simple, stupid. More like keep it simple and stupid. In 96, these guys did an album called Good Acoustics, and I'm not even going to let you guess the concept of that album. They redid Love of a Lifetime as a mid-tempo country tune. I didn't think there was a version I could hate more, but there you go. I really wanted to look at the song objectively for the podcast here, but man, after those first few bars, I just couldn't do it. I even looked at the lyrics hoping there would be something I would not dislike. Alas, it was not to be. I can without a doubt say I never want to hear this song again, period.
Lou.
It's amazing you say that because I did the same thing with this whole album. I even went to the lyrics like, all right, maybe they're deep. Maybe, why do people like this? And I can't figure out a reason other than it's genetically programmed to make panties drop. Oh my God, here it is, the power ballad. I knew there had to be one. And holy shnikes, this one sucks. From the first ethery prom keyboards, I've heard this everywhere before, acoustic guitar arpeggio. I could feel the suck fest building from the first harmony. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time as husband and wife, I can't put my finger on what syrupy chick fest dreck this piece of radio-friendly garbage is based off of, because I've heard this before, but I think maybe it's just because it is like AI generated dreck. It's like it's an almost direct clone of something. I don't know what it is. It sounds like every other sappy, pussified puke fest that infected every fucking major label and heavy rock band for the last 7 fucking years. Fuck this. Fuck this tune. Fuck this producer. Fuck this. Oh, and here, Pentultimate. This one's for Sam George.
As long as you didn't say fuck me for picking this album.
Well, that's coming later.
Okay.
And here it is. I remember this is hilarious because I wrote down like the exact same words of both of your reviews and kind of combined it into one. That's what we're going to get on this one. So, and here it is, the big power ballad designed to melt a teen girl's heart and get her panties wet. And this gives you every single power ballad trope in the book. Acoustic guitar prominent in the verses, big choruses with backing vocals and keyboards, emotional vocals and guitar solo, though oddly, Leverty finishes the solo with a shredding flurry that's out of place, and sappy, lovey-dovey lyrics that I'm sure mean so much to CJ Snare and made this a wedding song for many a couple back in the day. You confirmed that, Matt. And you know how I've been describing this band as generic a lot of the time this episode? This is generic times 10. I did not like this track way back then, as it was the only song by this band I was familiar with, and I dislike it times 10 now. But it was a hit, reaching number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100, but fuck that. This is
Aaron's Stinky Stinker.
And that brings us to the final track, Helpless, written by Bill Leverty and CJ Snare. How about this last one, Lou?
This riff's actually pretty good. It's driving. If the singer wasn't so Vince Neil off-key annoying, I'd almost be tapping my foot. I like the grinding volume-swelled guitars behind the verses with the chop-chop turnaround. It's a good rhythm. Here's the song to do the triple Lindy backflip guitar solo if there ever was a place to do it. It's a good album closer from a band that I could live without if I'd never heard it again. That high whatever note that singer's trying to hit at the end that busted a few light bulbs in my house with the volume turned up. Could have been worse. There could have been another enormous power ballad.
Matt.
This song suffers from being the song after Love of a Lifetime. I've usually checked out by now. I'm on to the next album and I want to listen to. I'm done. I was able to listen to this one kind of objectively, and it's just for me, it's just more of the same. It's almost like a bonus track, a throwaway. If they put 10 minutes of silence before it, which was a thing in CD era, yeah, I wouldn't care. I don't like the ending, though. It's almost anticlimactic. It's like you want another song right after it, but we're done. That's it. Like, okay.
You know, this isn't a particularly long album. It's only 48 minutes and change. But man, by the time we get to this track, just like you said, Matt, I have about had it with Firehouse. So let's see. One more pop rock tune. Hey, there's some slide guitar. But other than that, copy and paste everything I've said this episode about this band and this music. I mean, do you really need me to go through it all again? Do you? Now that the track by track is done, we'll give our final thoughts and album ratings. For you new listeners, a rating is a 0 to 5 system, with 5 being a favorite album of ours, all the way down to a 0, which is a wedding dance to Love of a Lifetime. Right, Matt?
Hell yeah.
Matt, what are your final thoughts on the Firehouse debut record?
I'm sure people much smarter than me have done studies about the effects of music on adolescent brains. Something about that age range, that 12 to 16 years old, the music you're exposed to at that point of brain development, it just sticks with you for the rest of your life. I was exposed to Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood in eighth grade, which was the year before this came out. It was the heaviest thing I had heard to that point, and that set me on a trajectory to hard rock and heavier stuff. This album came out when I was 14, and I don't know what it was, but it hit me differently at the time. Feel Good was the shot heard round my brain, but this album watered the seeds that were planted. There are parts of this album that I love. Those that have watched my videos know I don't talk about this, but the production is good. I like it. I rarely talk about production and the mix. Every time I've done an album with you guys, I try to do a lame lyric alert. If I could come up with an alliteration or a phrase that spelled out a naughty word for my least favorite song, I'd do that. But lame lyric alert is the best I can do. I don't have a lame lyric alert on this record because the entire record is the lame lyric alert. There is not one decent lyric on this record. I read them all. It was agonizing. It's all cliche, and 14-year-old me could have come up with better lyrics. Some people say grunge killed hair metal. I was one of them, but I don't think so anymore, because if this was the stuff that was getting pumped out in 1990, it was an overdose. In a way, it's not. It's kind of like the disposable pop that's out today. It's meant to be on the charts today and forgotten tomorrow. Us old farts just don't want to admit that some of our music sucked as well. The only reason this album sold 2 million copies is because there was a sappy ballad that appealed to women. There are no deep introspective lyrics. There's really no virtuoso performances other than some of the stuff, the guitar stuff that Bill Leverty had. It's just mindless adolescent lyrics and paint-by-numbers hair metal on the most basic level. No deviation on the sound. Even tempo changes are few and far between. That said, I give Firehouse a 4.5 on sentimentality alone. When I submitted this album to you, I wanted to give it a 5, for real. But an honest look at the lyrics and the desire to throw Love of a Lifetime into an eternal lake of fire keeps me from doing that. It was an album that was at the right place at the right time. 14-year-old me loved the unholy frig out of this, and even 46-year-old me can still enjoy it if I don't think about it too much. After going through this album, I had to immediately start on my next World's Worst record review just to cleanse my palate.
Lou.
There's definitely worse than this. Oh, but there's so much better. And it's all what these guys are covering, kind of. All those bands jumped the shark long before Firehouse even opened the garage door. I gave it a 2.5. This is what was wrong with mainstream heavy rock in 1990, and an example of why bands like Jane's Addiction, Nirvana, and Pearl Jam took over. You're right. This brand of heavy music needed a reset because of this. It got so it's not even that it got so excessive. It was just it got so homogenized by Suits doing this. I could see a Suit given – we were joking about it before – giving their producer a list of song titles and saying, you know, have them write these songs. That's what it sounds like. And they got a hotshot guitar player that just soloed through this whole thing. I mean, I'm not deriding the talent of any of these guys. Well, maybe the singer. But it's the way they were put together. And the way it was presented was they wanted a cash cow. And they got it with their platinum-selling album. But I don't need to, you know, I don't have to like it. 14-year-old me would have loved this.
Me too.
14-year-old me did love this, so yeah.
Well, there you go. Firehouse was formed in 1984 in Richmond, Virginia, when Bill Leverty and Michael Foster of the band White Heat joined forces with CJ Snare and Perry Richardson from the group Max Warrior, renaming themselves and relocating to Charlotte, North Carolina. The band began recording demos in Leverty's bedroom during the day and played hotel gigs at night to earn income. Firehouse was spotted at one of these shows by Michael Kaplan of Epic Records in December 1989 and signed the band to a record deal. The group entered the studio to cut its first album with producer David Prater, who once drummed for Santana and would go on to produce records for Dream Theater. When it was released, Firehouse's debut album was well received by critics and was a double platinum success for the band, largely due to the signature power ballad Love of a Lifetime. The band has changed bass players a few times over the years, but continue to put out records and still exists today, known to still be hugely popular in Asia. For me, it's most likely a case of a band showing up on the scene too late. I didn't know Firehouse was a glam metal band, and if they had first appeared in, like, say, 1985, I probably would have taken to them a lot better, just like they did for you, Matt, at the right place at the right time. At least I would have given them more attention. But in 1990... with the market saturated with hair metal acts and the genre's popularity winding down, not to mention the grunge movement lurking just around the corner, yeah, this band had no chance with me. Now, that said, the players have talent. I don't despise the album, and I've been praising Bill Leverty's guitar work in particular. But there's also a glaring lack of identity to this band. There's no strong personality to the group or the music. Everything sounds derivative at best, and at worst, generic. In all likelihood, I'm going to forget the band members' names in a week or so, and nothing about Firehouse screams memorable to me, except that steaming shit pile of a power ballad they do. Matt, I'm shaking my head at this pick, dude. I give Firehouse's debut a 2.5, and if the best I can say about it is I've heard worse, that also means it could also be a whole lot better. Now we'd like to thank Patreon legend and the fat bearded vinyl guy Matt Carwick for returning to the podcast and breaking down Firehouse with us. Good times, man.
Love it every time I talk to you guys. It's awesome.
Yeah, you were a really good sport. Plug your YouTube channel or anything else you got going on. Let's have it.
Well, fatbeardedvinylguy.com is my website. I have links to the Facebook, the YouTube channel. I'm with all the videos. I'm not as vulgar there, and my jokes aren't as dirty, but I adapt to my environment. I try to do a world's worst record review as often as I can, the wife and two daughter lifestyle, as well as the 40 plus hour a week third shift job and a photography side gig kind of throws a nice fat monkey wrench into that. Why do you got to spend so much time in the basement? Rah, rah, rah. If you want, she ain't going to listen to this. If you want, you can also go to my photo page. That's mjkphoto.us, mjkphoto.us. That's my other cost-effective hobby, photography. Thank God I quit smoking cigars.
And that's going to do it for this episode. You can find this podcast on all the podcasting platforms wherever you listen to them. If you like what you hear, please subscribe or follow the podcast and leave us a review. If you'd like to contact us directly, we can be reached at ridiculousrockrecords@gmail.com or also on the Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews Facebook page, where there's a link to hear each podcast. We're also on Twitter at R4PodcastAaron and Instagram under R4Podcaster. If you feel the podcast has value and would like to make a contribution to support it, please head over to Patreon and the Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews page and sign up on one of the monthly tiers. Feel free to leave all of your feedback, comments, reviews, and or suggestions at any of those places I just described. We'd love to hear from you. So for the R4 Podcast, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Lou.
See ya.
I finally found the love of a lifetime. We'll be right back.
Okay. I guess, Firehouse, huh? What the fuck, Matt?
You know what? If this will tell you anything about how this is going to go, when I was going through this, I was typing everything out, and I was going through it, reading through it and everything, I literally heard this in Lou's voice. So if that gives you any indication on how this is going to go.
You know when he goes, yeah, just like that, and that was cool. Yeah. That was a good guitar solo, Beavis. Okay, I think we got that out of our system. The following track is Home Is Where the... These song titles really are fucking... Holy shit, dude.
I know.
What the fuck, man?
It's almost as if a corporate suit wrote them.
Jeez.
Probably did.
Man, all right, let's go back.
Here, guys, this is the list of songs you guys need to write.
Yep.